Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. We're continuing our conversation with Dr. Brian Hales on Book of Mormon authorship. What are some other explanations? Would automatic writing be a good way to describe how Joseph wrote the Book of Mormon? Brian will talk about that, as well as Bill Davis's recent book, Visions of a Seer Stone, and we'll find out why Brian thinks both of those are not satisfactory solutions to authorship of the Book of Mormon. Check out our conversation.
The fourth theory is really interesting. We call it the automatic writing theory. Now, automatic writing, there's actually two flavors. Psychologists, particularly around 1920, were doing experimenting where they would take a person, and what the psychologist wants to do is find things that are in a person's unconscious. They've been stuffed there because they're too hard to deal with by the individual. And if you can get them out carefully and talk about them, you can increase a person's mental health. They'll feel better, less anxiety and things. So they want to get stuff out of the unconscious part of their brain. And they would isolate their arms and get them kind of really relaxed, and then their arm would just spontaneously write. That's automatic writing. That's the most clinical version. And then the words that are written would be used in therapy to try to help the person with things that have been stuffed into their unconscious mind. There's another form of automatic writing, also called trans writing, where people are put into a hypnotic trance, and then they can write, or they go into some kind of a mode where they're able to produce words that they couldn't do cognitively. Automatic writers of this sort never claim authorship of the words. These words came through me from another source. That's always what they will say. And in this respect, Joseph Smith is very similar. Okay, but the problem is that by showing a similarity, and the most common one is a woman named Pearl Curran, and Pearl produced over 4 million words during her lifetime. Mm-hmm. And one of the books that she produced was called The Sorry Tale. It's about 260,000 words. It's about Christ. And it's been compared to the Book of Mormon. It came in sessions that were producing 3,000 to 4,000 words a session through a Ouija board, not a seer stone, but it just came and it flowed. And when she'd stop and start up the next day, she wouldn't have to go back, just like Joseph. Lots of similarities. But when the naturalists try to use automatic writing as an explanation, they actually are not giving an explanation. They're just kicking the can down the road a little ways because they don't have an explanation for how Pearl Curran and other automatic writers are producing their words. And so Joseph Smith actually encountered this right as the Book of Mormon was being published when Hiram Page, you remember that episode, he had a seer stone and he was producing pages. I mean, that's automatic writing as much as any automatic writer. And Joseph prayed about it and was told that this came from Satan. So Joseph's explanation for automatic writings would probably be that God is giving him the right stuff, and false spirits are giving other people the other stuff, because even though Pearl Curran's The Sorry Tale book was about Christ, Christ in it is not the Redeemer. He's not the Savior. He's just a really good teacher. So even though you've got this very long book, it's quite eloquent in places, difficult to read because it's in a funny form of English, but it's not talking about the same Christ that we do. See, it's a divergent view of him, a naturalist view. And so anyway, automatic writing has gained some popularity as an explanation, but it really isn't an explanation because we don't know how Pearl Curran could produce all of her words either. So, the next one is a storyteller theory, and I have an article coming out in Interpreter that compares Joseph Smith to professional storytellers. Now, they can tell stories day after day after day, or one big long story that could take 5 or 6 days to put together. And to make a long story short, Rick, all they're doing is memorizing formulas that are sentences with words that can be plugged in here and there. And so they memorize these, and as the story goes along, they just have to plug in a word here or a word there, and the rest of it's all memorized and comes out very much as a routine for them. And they're called formula patterns, formula systems, And when you write down or make a transcript of the stories that are told this way, you can see the pattern right there in the text. And we look at the Book of Mormon, there are no patterns like that. I mean, there's chiasmus and things, but the whole book isn't out of a chiasm. And honestly, trying to create a chiasm in real time doesn't necessarily make it easier. I think it makes it more difficult. So the storytelling theory hasn't gotten a lot of traction. Bill Davis mentioned it in his PhD dissertation. I mentioned Bill Davis because he wrote the book Envisions in a Seer Stone.
Right.
And I admire what Bill is trying to do.
Well, and I was going to ask, is this the same, this patterns, is that the same thing as laying down heads that Bill mentions in his book?
Well,
or is it different?
It's interesting. Bill is trying to give us an explanation of what's going on in Joseph's head while he's dictating the stream of words that become the Book of Mormon. Nobody else has done this. My friend Dan Vogel, you know, has published this 715-page biography.
Mm-hmm.
He never once tries to tell us how Joseph was able to create all of these final draft sentences. He just assumes Joseph could do it. And Bill is trying to go in and explain what is going on cognitively and what kind of thoughts Joseph was having as he's dictating. And I admire Bill for that. In fact, in his PhD dissertation, he gives us a couple of views, because he does talk about professional storytellers right at the end of his book, briefly. And but the primary theory that he promotes, and it's in, in his PhD dissertation, he briefly mentions professional storytellers, but in his book, Visions in a Seer Stone, he focuses on an idea that laying down heads is how professionals, preachers, revivalist preachers, were able to tell their very long 2-hour, if you will, sermons, but then they could come back the next day and give a 2-hour sermon and give another one, and they're doing it by laying down heads. And you know what that means, but it...
Yeah, I've read some of Bill's books. So the idea here, I think, is you kind of have a little bit of an outline, and then the preacher refers back to that outline. Each of those points is called a head, and then he can just expound on a certain head until he gets to the next one, and then he follows. So I know Bill, at least from what I've read, I'm about halfway through Bill's book, said basically a lot of preachers did this, also with the Book of Mormon, if you look at the introduction, the original 1830 version, not our version, but it would give a summary of what was going to happen next. And so that summary was an outline that Joseph Smith followed. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, no, and I think Bill brings up a pretty good point, except that he also insists in his book that this process was something that didn't really exist until the 19th century. And in a response that I wrote, a book review, it was published in Interpreter, I just went through and showed how Josephus did this. Aristotle talked about having a summary statement and then going into the details after, which would be a head, laying down a head and then going through. This is something that's as old as oratory and writing, as near as I could tell. It's not an area of my expertise, but I just picked up my book of Josephus and then found the originals, the earliest versions of this. People were using heads anytime people are writing. Not everybody used them, but somebody was seeing that it's good to tell people what you're going to tell them, and then you tell them, and then sometimes you go back and tell them what you told them. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just common oratory. And so I don't think that's a real strong argument. But the real problem with this, and this is I call this the oral performance theory. And it's the idea that Joseph just became a really good orator, a really good revivalist preacher kind of guy. And then he used those skills to produce the stream of words. And the problem with this is that the revivalist preachers that could do that weren't 23-year-old farmers. These were people who were well-seasoned. They'd been preaching on the circuit for a long time. They had immersed themselves in the material. They had nearly memorized the Bible, neither of which we can show Joseph having done, if we go to the historical record. And then, and having practiced for many times, they're able to get up and just speak using the skills that a very well-established orator would use. And we just can't find that Joseph Smith had those skills. And for that reason, this really, I don't think, is a very strong argument. Whether somebody could just use those skills to create a 270,000-word book at all is not something that's been shown. But even on a daily basis, it's hard to say. Joseph wasn't known to have even preached a single sermon prior to the church being organized. This is not somebody who's practicing in front of an audience, either using storytelling skills or oratory skills. Sorry, my watch is going off here.
Oh, no problem. I'm just reminded of my interview with Michael Quinn, and he said that especially, you know, Sidney Rigdon was a much more eloquent speaker, especially in the early church, than Joseph was, and that a lot of people said that Joseph's sermons were pathetic.
Well, it's not a skill that the historical record supports that he had, and we can talk about that more in a few minutes. The last two theories, one is just a creative writing theory that Joseph was secretly making a manuscript. See, he didn't learn composition in school because they didn't have anything to write on. They didn't even have slates, and paper was very expensive. The original Book of Mormon was recorded on five different kinds of paper because it was difficult to get paper, and they were right on whatever they could get. And so Joseph wouldn't have had any training in composition. It wasn't part of the curriculum in the district schools at that time anyway. And then there's just, if Joseph had a manuscript, is he memorizing it word for word each night? There's evidence that he worked late sometimes there, and he fooled everybody or he sneaked it into the hat. It has a lot of weaknesses. The last theory, the eighth one, I call the intellect theory. And what it basically, it's the most popular one today. But it's rather simple. It doesn't have a lot of details. It's basically, if you ask the question, what skills would a person need to create the Book of Mormon? The answer is the skills Joseph Smith had in 1829. And if you ask the question, what skills did Joseph have in 1829? The answer is the skills needed to create the Book of Mormon. And I'm not trying to be snarky, and I'm not trying to misrepresent. But really, that's the most popular theory today, is that they use the Book of Mormon as evidence of Joseph's skills. Now, a naturalist who disallows anything supernatural, you can understand how that would really appeal. We don't know how he did it, but he did it. And, you know, there's no supernatural influences, so it must have been in his skill set in 1823. They don't appeal to the historical record because it doesn't in any way support this.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Brian Hales. In our next conversation, we'll talk about the skills required to write the Book of Mormon. Did Joseph have an amazing memory?
The problem is, and this is probably as good a place to talk about it as it, well, let's come back to it. But if he's thinking about the Book of Mormon, he's either got to write it down or he's got to commit all of the details to memory. And we'll look at some of those details of the Book of Mormon here in a minute. But that either one of those is a difficult challenge. And not something that's just done by, oh, let's see, today I'm going to, you know, memorize five plot lines and make up five names and things like this and then commit them all to memory so that they will be available for me to put into a perfectly wordsmith sentence, you know, as I'm dictating here in a few months or years.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe for just $5 a month at patreon.com/gospeltangents, and you can hear the entire interview before everybody else. If you'd like to watch the entire video for just $8 a month, you can either subscribe on YouTube, Patreon, or my website, gospeltangents.com. Just click the yellow subscribe button, and I'll add you to our Gospel Tangents Insiders group so that you can see entire videos. For those interested in a PDF transcript, you can subscribe at either Patreon or on my website. For just $10 a month, I'll send you a PDF as soon as it's complete. If you'd like a copy of the paperback as well as a PDF, just sign up for $20 a month at either Patreon or my website, gospeltangents.com. Of course, you can buy individual transcripts at amazon.com and just do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview and you can see all the things that we have there. Don't forget to support Gospel Tangents with an awesome t-shirt like one of these.
You can subscribe at Apple Podcasts at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. Get our latest updates at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Also, you can get our Twitter updates at gospeltangents. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got more of our great videos. Thanks again.